Hello and welcome to today's episode of Brainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Dysfunctional is a strong word, Jonathan. Mm-hmm. It is often used to describe something that is not working at all. And I don't really mean that in the title when we start talking about six symptoms of a dysfunctional church. I am more referring to churches that are not functioning well. It does not mean that they're not operating. It does not mean that they're not doing some type of good in the community and with the members. But if you net it all out, there's really a net negative to what is taking place with these churches. And I know you're too young to remember this, but there was a vice president to Richard Nixon in the 1970s. I don't think you were alive then.
No.
Because you're too young. And his name was Spiro Agnew.
Mm-hmm.
And Spiro Agnew ended up getting having to resign from office for different reasons. Of course, Nixon did as well. Wasn't a very good team when it all comes together. But he would just jump on negativity, especially the press. And he always referred to the negative nabobs of negativity.
Hmm.
He liked to alliterate.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think I can be a negative nabob of negativity about the church because there are just so many things that I say that are wrong with the church. I still remain an obnoxious optimist about congregations across America and across the world. However, we do not need to be the proverbial ostrich with our head in the sand.
Nope.
We need to look at the realities of what is taking place. So I'm talking about churches dysfunctionally, and I am saying that these churches are some of the toughest churches, some of the worst churches, some of the churches that are in the worst conditions. And the sad thing about it is when this went out in one form or another as a blog post, there was way too much identity with what was taking place by both leaders and members. So I just wanted to give that preface to this this whole idea of what is a dysfunctional church before we get into some of the characteristics.
And you don't list these as a critical spirit, but as a awakening, trying to open people's eyes to the fact that these are occurring in the local church, not criticizing the local churches for being this way.
That's right. And it goes back to, and I know our sponsor for the podcast today is Autopsy, the book that I wrote a few months ago. And that book was not meant to be critical of the church. It was just warnings. And this is warnings as well. These are things that you can look at and you can say, okay, maybe we need to go in another direction. So that's the purpose behind them.
Yeah, and a lot of times pastors and church members alike, they see these things in their church, but they can't really put a finger on them or identify them, and you just give words to what they're seeing, and the proverbial light bulb goes off.
And that's been one of the more gratifying things about the ministry of the blog, about the ministry of the podcast, and the ministry of the books, that people are saying, I knew that, I just did not know how to articulate it.
So number one in the six symptoms of a dysfunctional church is severe theological errors are pervasive in the church. Everything rises and falls with that theology.
Yeah, this is number one because it's number one.
Yes.
If there is severe theological errors in the church, and if they are pervasive, which means it is believed throughout most of the church, then probably the church is not a church. It's probably not just a dysfunctional church. It's no longer a real church. A true biblical church, by definition, has core doctrinal beliefs. And I do know that there are church leaders, and I do know that there are church members, for example, who would have dispute with John 14:6. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me, says Jesus. That is the exclusivity of salvation through Christ. That is a core doctrine. That is a cardinal doctrine of the Christian faith. If that is what is being taught and believed and accepted in the church, we might not even need to call it a dysfunctional church, but it certainly is at the least a dysfunctional church. There are other churches I know that have denied, and church members and leaders who have denied the virgin birth, who have denied substitutionary atonement of Christ. I could go on and on and on. Those are some of the core beliefs, and if that's taking place, if that's believed, if that's taught in the church, then you have a very dysfunctional church.
The second one is that the church is known as a pastor eater.
Isn't that a terrible phrase?
Yeah.
I mean, that for some reason, again, I'm showing my age. Have you ever seen Pac-Man?
Yes.
You
know, I had it on Atari when I was a kid.
Oh, that was in your
yes.
your generation. Oh, cool. I didn't even know that. I thought that was, anyway, I thought you were younger than that. You know how the little dot just goes around and eats up other dots?
Yep.
And okay, you know how that works. Well, for whatever reason, when I'm thinking about Pastor Eater, I see these churches that are these big dots, and I know that this is audio, and I'm trying to make it visual, but I see these churches that are these big dots, and here come the little dots, which are the pastors, and they go, bop, 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 and they just eat them up. Of course, in Pac-Man, the object is to eat the dots, and you win, and the church, when you eat up the pastor, you do not win. Now, what I'm saying is very simply this, and I'm making light of it, and I really shouldn't. Forced terminated pastors are too common. Pastors who are forced out, even though there may not have been a formal action to terminate them, are too common. I do not have the current numbers. I wish I had brought them here. I know that there have been some studies that have been done, but I can simply say that it is way too common. And I do know this, that the average tenure of a pastor is about 3.5 years, and that also includes many of those who have been forced terminated. And hardly a week goes by, and you see the social media communication that comes through. I see the texts, and I see the emails that come through. Hardly a week goes by that we don't hear from someone who has been forced terminated from a church, and it's a tragic situation. Dysfunctional churches have a series of those issues taking place. Let me tell you
and
about it.
And it doesn't always have to be forced termination in those series. It could be pastors coming in, realizing what's going on, and getting out
before it happens to them.
Yeah, it's just a series of turnover after turnover after turnover.
And that's well stated. I was in a church in New England not too long ago, and the pastor had been there, I think it was about to be his seventh year. And before that, the church had gone through a series of pastors, forced terminated, forced out, left under pressure. I don't think any of them were moral failures, just the church and the pastor did not get along. And now they had made it 7 years with the pastor, but things were not going well. And the members were afraid that they were going to do it again. We've made it 7 years. Things are not going well. Are we about to pick up the pattern where we left off?
That seven-year itch.
Seven-year itch, but at the same time, 7 years was a pretty long tenure for this church. And I think they'll make it. I think the good news is that they will make it. But at least those members and those leaders in that church had an awareness that they were that type of church.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about pastoral tenure and the times where pastors leave right before the things are about to turn around. And they get out or they're forced out when just around the corner, if they just hang in that much longer. We've seen time and time again where pastors who, you know, they wanted to throw in the towel, but they didn't. And they stuck around and revitalization came.
Yeah, I recently had a blog post where I actually addressed that issue. And what I said was the reality of it is one of the characteristics of churches that make it is the pastor has longer pastoral tenure usually. And it typically is between years 5 and 7 when the true fruit of the ministry takes place. And so in that particular blog post, I encourage pastors to do everything they can within God's will to make it to that 5th to 7th year, or otherwise they will probably never see the fruit of their ministry.
The next one here is likely the most obvious one, and it's that the congregation experiences severe conflict. You know, conflict leads to dysfunction.
I was in a church in South Florida not too long ago, a couple of years ago, to my recollection. And it was actually a pretty healthy situation, but it had not been a pretty healthy situation. The remnant of the unhealthy situation and the unhealthy members showed up once a quarter for the infamous what?
Business meeting.
Business meeting. Yeah. And the pastor said, "Hey, Tom, come on with me. You'll get a kick out of this. This will be good for your blog post, and this will be good."
Yeah, he didn't say for days.
He didn't say it'd be good for my podcast because I don't think I was doing them back then. But he said, "I think this will be good information for your research." And the church had gone through all kinds of difficulty. A new pastor had come in, had begun to stabilize, but had begun some major changes in the church, and this remnant did not like it. And so there were lots of people in the worship service, great spirit, lots of people in the 4 or 5 worship service they had. And then it came time Sunday night for the infamous business meeting.
Call us to order.
There was no order to call to. There were, I'm going to guess, maybe 50 or 60 people there in a church, maybe running 2,000, 2,500. Wow. And you walk into the room and you look, these people are really mad. And the pastor pointed out to me that, about a third of them don't even come to church anymore. Some of them even don't have membership and shouldn't even be there. And he had a great spirit, and he was just able to go with it. But, oh, some of the words that were said, that represented the before of the church. And now it had been isolated four times a year, a handful, relative handful of people. But churches that are dysfunctional have this ongoing severe conflict. It might be conflict between staff members. It might be conflict between members. It might be conflict between the church body and the church leadership. They take it to new levels. You often hear emotional outbursts. You often hear loud arguments taking place. I even know one pastor, somebody came into his office with a gun and said, "If you don't change things, this is for you." I think that is pretty dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Jonathan, I don't often see you speechless. I just got some pretty good examples here, and you just
wow.
I wish well, you.
What's the one that you've dealt with the most? I mean, or the worst one you had to deal with whenever you were a pastor?
When I was a pastor, the worst one I had to deal with had to do with starting a second campus. That was a long time ago.
Yeah,
and multi-campus were not that well known then. And
you're a forerunner.
I was, and I was stupid too. We were landlocked. We didn't have any way to acquire any land. It was all residential around us, and I thought it was a pretty simple solution. We just start another campus and a storefront about 3 miles away. Seems simple to me. Yeah. Oh my goodness, no! It was pretty lively. I survived it. The church survived, and even though it did not stay as a part of a second campus, it is now a very, very healthy, thriving church. I made it, but I didn't have any fun.
Number four is that hardly anyone in the community knows the church exists. I remember a story that you've told here on the podcast about whenever you got down into South Florida and went across the street, you know, witnessing, and people didn't even realize where the church was, even though you could see it from their door.
And, you know, I've got to get your geography right. St. Petersburg is not
South. Is that not South Florida?
That's Southwest Florida. If you go into don't roll your eyes at me. If you go into the state of Florida, South Florida is Southeast Florida. Otherwise,
Souther than here.
I know, but you got to refer to it as Southwest Florida. And that was the case. That was a church where I pastored in St. Petersburg, and you go across the street, and they don't know that the church exists. At least you go a block, catty-corner to the church. One of the things I did when I was a consultant, and every now and then I'll go help my son Sam, who still has it's been a while since we mentioned Sam on a podcast.
Since last week.
Yeah, probably. I was working with Sam, and we ask, you know, who in the community knows the church, and it was zero. Mm. It was absolutely zero. So that was one of the recommendations we made.
Yeah.
Might be good for those homes and those businesses immediately surrounding the church to know you're there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's...
There are a lot of things that churches can do for this. One of them that I was a part of when I was younger is that every year at Christmas, we blanketed the city with some kind of Christmas invitation or at least something. Knocked on every door in the city. It was a small town. It was when I was in high school. But at the same time, you know, First Baptist Church, Ponchatoula, we knew what we had to do, and we had to be known in the community, and we made that happen every year.
One thing that I did at a couple of my churches, and I don't know if I've mentioned this. If I have mentioned, I can't imagine, as long as we've been doing the blog and the podcast together, I haven't mentioned something. I relatively have anything new. I rarely have anything new. But we got door hangers, mm-hmm. and the door hangers had a list of things. Are you interested in the following? And then it was a place, is there any other way our church might help or minister to you? And we would go door to door, and we'd put them on doors, obviously. We'd put them on doorknobs. And there was, we will be back within 2 hours. We will not knock on your door. We will simply pick them up. And we went around, and we probably did one day a couple of thousand homes with the number of people were there. And we picked it up, and we found what the significant needs in the community were. And then a few weeks later, we went back and we said, we've heard you, and we put that on there. Here are some things that we will be doing for our community. People were just absolutely amazed that we did the survey and that we were willing to respond. We couldn't do everything. You know, some people said they wish we had a gymnasium. Well, we just couldn't build a gymnasium. We did not have those type of resources then. But that really helped us to get known in the community, because we weren't asking community members to do something for us. We were asking what we could do for them.
Number five, the church is declining while the community is growing.
This is one of those disguised issues among churches. It's where you can be lulled into thinking that everything is all right. And here's the example. I don't like to get into numbers too much, because it bores the audience, and quite frankly, it bores me if I give too many numbers. But let's say the church has been growing steadily, and you look back, and 5 years later, the church is, say, 10% larger than it was. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Great.
We always want to celebrate it. But what if in that time the community growth has been significant, and it's 20%? Well, I don't want to minimize the positive that the church grew 10% in 5 years, but it lost ground in the community. Yeah. It lost ground relatively. Of course, the easy thing to do is just say, is the church declining while the community is growing? That's obvious. Yeah. The church is going down in population. The community is going up. So you're definitely losing ground here. But the former illustration that I just gave is one that I think that church leaders need to be aware of. They need to look at their demographics, not numbers for numbers' sake, but they need to look at their demographics in order to discern how effective are we in getting connected with community members.
Do you think number five is a offshoot of number four? That because they don't know the community, because people in the community don't know they exist, they tend to decline or not grow as fast as the community if it is growing?
Oh, yeah. These are not only correlated, they may even be causative. If the church is not making an overt effort to connect with the community, the church is obviously not going to grow in the community. And here's one other thing that I want to mention, Jonathan, in this context. There is a misperception. I don't know how pervasive it is, but there is a misperception that unchurched, non-church people are not receptive to church members inviting. Mm-hmm. That is just simply not true. We've done the research. Yep. Only about 5 out of 100 persons that are unchurched are actually antagonistic. We need to stop using that as an excuse, and we need to start being very intentional about reaching our community.
And the final mark of a dysfunctional church is that the church is a family-owned and family-operated one.
Got to be careful on this one, in the sense that I can step on a lot of toes. There's nothing wrong with having family members connected throughout a church. The second church I ever pastored, I could ask for a volunteer, and I'm not going to give the name of the family because they're still very pervasive in that church, but I could say, could I have someone from the blank family come up? Well, immediately about 50 people would stand up, and that didn't include every, and they had a strange name at that, Wanton Smith or Jones. And I got to say, in that church, it was actually very healthy.
Yeah.
They didn't try to do power plays.
They didn't make it about themselves.
They didn't make it about themselves. In that particular church, they were all about helping the church. But it is possible that, in fact, it happens in many churches that there is one or maybe a few, and sometimes that they are connected families that think of the church as being my church, that think about this as we've been here for generations or we've been here for 50 years, and therefore we've always done it this way and we will continue to do it this way. And it's those type of churches that become dysfunctional. I have pastored a church that had symptoms of this. It was not significant, but it had symptoms of this. But the purpose of the church in that particular example was to meet the needs of the family. And if anything changed in that negative situation, the family got mad, and the family would usually force the pastor out or some other leaders out.
Do you think this trend is declining as churches move more urban and, I guess, and larger? We see the rise of the megachurch.
The answer to the first part of the question is yes. This trend is declining, and you answered a good part of the second. There is a trend that more and more church members are now in larger churches, which is diluting the power of family churches. And there's something else that is taking place, and that is the death of churches. Mm. And churches that are family-owned and family-operated are among those multi-thousand that probably are going to be closing, sadly, year by year. At least the sad part is that churches are closing. So these are some of the signs and symptoms of dysfunctional churches. And again, I want to reiterate what I said at the beginning, Jonathan, that dysfunctional means very, very sick. It's not just every church is imperfect. If you ever look for a perfect church, you'll never find it. If you ever look for a perfect church member, it will not be you. If you ever look for a perfect church pastor, you will not find that pastor. These are the situations where the symptoms are so strong, so noticeable, so negative that you can only call the church dysfunctional.
So if I'm a pastor listening to this and I recognize two or three or four or maybe even five or six of these in my church, what do I do?
Let's do this. Instead of starting a whole nother topic, let's refer them back to the blog post of August 6th,
okay,
2014. Have them go to TomRainer.com, and there's a blog post about what do you do with unchangeable, unmovable church members, which would include many of these type of members in this situation.
Yeah, we'll put that link in the bottom of the post here.
There you go. And that'll be a lot easier rather than me starting a whole nother topic, because I think it's a valid topic that we need to pursue.
And there is hope. We talked about that at the beginning of the podcast, that you remain an obnoxious optimist. There is hope if you are pastoring one of these churches.
Yeah, I would never want a pastor to immediately see or hear about these symptoms and simply say, I got to get out of here. I have seen too many churches and I've seen too many leaders be involved in turnaround situation. You know, you mentioned that the way you first met me, you didn't really meet me, mm-hmm. was through a book called Breakout Churches.
Still my favorite.
Is it really? Still even more than I am a church member in Autopsy?
Well, those are growing on me.
I'm glad because you're promoting them. That whole story about breakout churches is churches that broke out that should not have, that were going in one direction and didn't change pastors and ended up going in another direction, which was positive. And so there is hope, there is possibility, and I'll remain that obnoxious optimist that you mentioned.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by Autopsy of a Deceased Church. Whether your church is vibrant or dying, Autopsy of a Deceased Church will walk you through the radical paths necessary to keep your church alive to the glory of God and the advancement of Christ's kingdom. You can find out more about this book at TomRainer.com/autopsy. I know that's your favorite web address that I give out here on the show.
Absolutely. TomRainer.com/autopsy. There's just something morbid about that that's creepy as well. Just wrap it up by saying I've gotten a lot of questions in a lot of areas, but they're all somewhat related to this whole idea of what does it take to revitalize a church. Kind of excited that not too long around the corner, we'll be giving some information about a conference on video that's coming up that'll expand upon this, do some things that we cannot do in a short podcast or in a briefly read blog post. So we'll be talking more about that.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at TomRainer.com.